Hey, Soul Tribe. Welcome back. This is episode 1.8 of Beyond Deconstructing. I'm your host, T. Jamaica Pogue, affectionately known as Deconstructing Euro. You may have noticed that there was no new episode last week. And if you guys have been following my vlog series, Untethered, which I highly recommend you do if you haven't already. But if you have, then you would have seen in the most recent episode that I go into a little bit more detail as to why that was. And I also expand upon what you guys are going to see tone shift wise moving forward when it comes to both Beyond Deconstructing and Untethered. So with this episode, this is a transitional episode. This is a compilation episode of all of my previous guests and their journeys of discovering their neurodivergence, starting with my own story. I actually put out a video over the summer where I expanded a little bit more on my journey with discovering my neurodivergence, starting with discovering that I have ADHD and how that went down the rabbit hole of discovering that I am autistic. And then I also wanted to include the lived experiences of the first 7 guests. So if you guys are new to the podcast, or if you just want to get a refresher of the people who have been on the podcast so far, this is going to be a great episode for you guys. So again, we're going to start off with a clip of me from a video that I posted over the summer that gives you guys a little bit more a background about myself. And it's a good way of getting a lot of anecdotes about me in one area as opposed to going through my whole TikTok feed. Although, look, I ain't gonna, you know, discourage you from giving me some views there either. But this is all nice and neat and in one package. And then, like I said, you guys will get a nice introduction to a nice variety of actually autistic people, some with formal diagnosis, some are self-diagnosed, some were self-diagnosed before they received a formal diagnosis. So there's a nice variety and a nice mix for you guys to really see in one space, kind of back to back, hearing these stories, how similar we all are, but also how different we are as well. And I think that that is super beautiful and super necessary for people to see the true spectrum of autism and autistic people. So I'm going to stop flapping my gums and turn it over to another time when I flap my gums and then to some pretty awesome people. So I thank you guys again for stopping by, and I really hope you guys enjoy this little compilation I put together for you. I realized that I am autistic, or at least I let myself admit it to myself about a year and a half ago. But it is something that I thought for a really long time, especially when I would be in certain social situations. And after everything, I would sit and think about, like, okay, why did this go wrong? Or why did I feel like I definitely failed at this social interaction in some kind of way? There was always this lingering thought in the back of my mind. But because I wasn't very educated on autism, I was basing it on the stereotypes, which are overwhelmingly representative of how certain autistic traits and ADHD traits present in young white boys. Because that was my baseline, I just dismissed it out of my mind for so long. But once I was placed into an environment that was a everyday test of my complete difference in social abilities or even desires, it just became more and more obvious to me that, yeah, I am autistic and I need to just accept it. And I'm so forever grateful that I did, because as an autistic person and also someone with ADHD, once I learned about this and knew it was something that I was interested in, I dove head in, started hyperfixating on it and learning so much more. And it just, the more I learned, the more it confirmed my experiences, the more it confirmed how I had been feeling intrinsically for so long, and really validated a lot of the things that were just dismissed away by myself and by other people. I know that I do not have a unique story in this, being a woman and also being a woman of color, just having this be completely missed for most of my life. Firstly, just speaking from the Black perspective, at least, mental health is just now being something that a lot of people are being willing to be open about and pursue professional help. And it's typically the younger generation, because there's still a lot of people, millennials included and older, in the Black community, who just say, oh, you know, that they dismiss away any kind of mental health issues, and don't let them be religious as well. Because they're like, you know, God ain't make no mistakes. You ain't this, you ain't that. You just a little this, you just a little that. A lot of avoidance, a lot of dismissive, a lot of, you know, sweeping things under the rug and not wanting to address them, calling a spade, right? Then, on the other hand, being a woman, a lot of the ways that, at least in myself, that ADHD and autism presented were not seen necessarily as a mental health issue or something that was linked to how I think it was, or was linked to like a behavioral issue. It's like, oh, T, she just talks too much and she talks very fast. Or sometimes T doesn't talk at all. And then from the perspective of being a woman, a lot of the ways that like ADHD and autism presents in us, and especially how it has presented in me, it was a benefit in a lot of ways to me socially, because I was able to make up for some of my social deficits by being incredibly capable, super smart, a people pleaser. I was a fawner. You know, so those things actually helped me in a lot of ways, and it helped me mask or get by with being a little bit awkward, or like, oh, she didn't really get that, but you know what, she's smart, we understand, she's not an idiot, so we're not gonna, you know, completely make fun of her, but still kind of. So yeah, when you come from an environment where mental health issues are often dismissed or attributed to just like a behavioral issue, and the way you mask winds up benefiting you in a lot of ways, it is very, very easy for your parents, people who, you know, your teachers, counselors, doctors, to miss the now very obvious signs of autism and ADHD. Now, when it comes to neural spiciness, I recognized the ADHD before I recognized the autism. And what really started to click for me was, anyone who knows me knows that I am like a jack of all trades. When I find something, a new hobby or a new craft or something that I like, I start to like dive deep into it and I go hard. Like, and it's usually something creative where I'm like buying a bunch of materials and making a bunch of stuff, and I'll like really go in. And I would have a habit of like trying to turn them into businesses for some reason. And like, I'm like, oh, well, I can like make this, and I make them pretty well, so I'll just like sell it. And it's like, you know, I did that over and over again, wasted a lot of money, started a lot of businesses when I really didn't want to. It was more like I started making these things or getting into these things. I was good at it. And then other people was like, oh, we're like, oh, you should just sell these. You should make money off of them. And then I, you know, being like boundaryless at that point, I was like, oh yeah, sure. And then like went into it. But then when I did it, I put all this money into it, and then like hardly anybody supported me in return. So after doing that enough times, I was like, you know what? I need to step back. I'm like, why am I like this? You know, why do I keep doing this? Because I don't like the fact that I like go so hard into these things and then like get lost in them and waste a lot of time, money, and resources on things that like I just kind of like, but I don't actually want to turn them into a business. Why am I like this? And that, asking that initial question, is what led me down the rabbit hole of discovering not just ADHD, but also autism as well. So along with hyperfixating, I also have like a constant inner monologue all the time. And when I found out that there are people who don't always have like an inner monologue going on all the time, I was like, really? Like, you guys don't like think and then like are also able to observe the fact that you're thinking, like, this is not normal, or like most people don't do this. Like, you can literally sit there and like have no thoughts. Wow. And then I started to look into that. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, that's also connected to ADHD, impulsivity, you know, inability to regulate in certain regards that I won't elaborate on. But yeah, just a lot of obvious signs once I ask that initial question of why. Am I somebody who likes to start a bunch of things, get really into it, get good at it, and then all of a sudden lose interest in it? Domino effect down into, oh yeah, full-blown ADHD. And I think it's important to focus on the fact that it wasn't just that one thing. It was the catalyst that connected hundreds of dots. Because one thing that I am seeing a lot is because of the increase in awareness of and self-awareness of autism and ADHD and other neurodivergencies, a lot of people are dismissing it away as being trendy. Like, come on, who wants to be someone who struggles socially? Who would actually own up to that if it weren't true? And I don't say it as like being autistic is a bad thing, because I don't think it is. I think it's misunderstood, and that's one of the main reasons why we're even here having these discussions and future discussions. But like, I wouldn't choose to have had the experiences that I have, especially because they led to a lot of trauma responses that I have only started to unpack over the last few years, and I'm 34 years old. So no, it's not a fad. The increased numbers that you're seeing are directly related to an increase in awareness. Back to what I was saying. So when it comes to discovering my neural spiciness, so I had already understood fully, okay, now, yeah, I know I have ADHD, but there were some things that still didn't connect or still didn't click, and they were almost all social. Like, I don't really have any intellectual deficits or anything like that, but my deficits are definitely, quote unquote deficits, are definitely social. And I first started to really want to understand why I was having so many miscommunications once I started to have a very interesting relationship, one that I will not elaborate on here on YouTube or on any of my social media, more than to say that this relationship was a major catalyst and continues to be a major catalyst for me unlocking and understanding neurotypical communication, because I had so many vital and integral and huge misunderstandings within this relationship that sparked deep introspection and really was a major catalyst for a lot of my growth. I know a lot of people ask me, I've been asked this before, like, oh my goodness, how did you connect these dots? Like, what, so it sparked this, especially when I speak to other people who have had similar journeys of self-diagnosis. They usually say, well, yeah, my partner helped me put these pieces together, or, you know, this very intimate relationship that I had with this person, they really sparked this recognition in me. And I'm like, yeah, no. So mine is, it's a little bit different. I mean, it's similar, but different. But any interpersonal relationship can serve as a mirror, because that's all we are. We are all mirrors for each other. And whenever you are in a relationship with someone else, whether it be a family, platonic or romantic, work relationships, whatever, there's always that ability to mirror whether you're doing it consciously or subconsciously to someone. And a lot of the times that's what's happening. Like, if you are someone like myself who's gone through and continues to go through a healing journey and has reached a point where you have a lot of self-acceptance and a lot of self-love, the way you show up in the world will mirror to other people a lot of the ways they lack, especially if they have a very strong response to you. It's usually because the way you show up is just a mirror reflecting back to them a lot of the things that either they don't want to admit or they don't want to see about themselves, or things that make them feel some kind of way. And not, it's not always negative. Unfortunately, right now for me, it's mostly negative, but sometimes, and I'm finding a lot, especially with my community online, it's reflecting back to people and validating them and showing them like, oh my goodness, there is someone else out there who has this experience too. And it's a mirror reflecting to them all the ways that they are starting to accept themselves. But anyway, back to the major misunderstandings. These misunderstandings led to a lot of dark night of the soul moments, a lot of just like unpacking and asking and answering the whys. Why did we have such fundamental misunderstandings when I was saying exactly what I meant? How did they not understand me? And why was I continuously, I guess, misunderstanding this person? And I understood that our communication styles were completely different. And we both speak English, but we weren't speaking the same language. I am a very literal thinker, and I'm also not manipulative with my words. So I say exactly what I mean. Even if I have to say it in a softer way, I still say exactly what I mean. And I learned that through this relationship that most people, I guess, especially in this society, in Western society, at the very least, aren't very direct. They're very passive. They imply. They rely on you picking up on social cues as opposed to speaking directly. And I never really understood that. But once I understood that, a lot of things started to make sense as to why I was having misunderstandings, not just with this person, but with a lot of other people, and why people would act, would have weird reactions, what I thought were strange reactions to things that I would say, because I would be answering their questions literally when they didn't mean what they were actually asking. I made a TikTok not too long ago where I was able to laugh about it now, but it was a perfect example of my very literal thinking and how neurotypicals are very indirect. So I totally did not realize that this guy that worked at the gym was hitting on me. And there, I set the scene by saying, you know, I'm still pleasantly plump now, but I used to be like over 120 pounds bigger. So, you know, that coupled with this was 2016-ish. So definitely before I've gone through this huge emotional journey where I'm like, ugly where? And that's not to be conceited, but like, I just fully love and accept myself, right? But anywho, I say all that to set the scene. I'm walking into the gym because I am trying to get in shape. You know, at that point, I was one of my many times trying to do it on my own. Walking to the gym. It wasn't my home gym, but I had one of those Planet Fitness Black cards, so I could go to any gym that I wanted to. Come in. I go to sign in on a little, you know, clipboard. I don't know how they do it now, but back then you had to sign in on a clipboard if it wasn't your home gym. And so he comes up to me and he was like, oh, is this your home gym? And again, I'm thinking he's just asking me a question. I'm not like in the back of my mind, like, why is he asking me this question? Like, shouldn't he know that this isn't my home gym if I'm signing in? I wasn't thinking it. I'm just like, okay, he's asking me a question. I'm going to answer his question. And I'm like, no. And then he proceeds to ask me some other questions, you know, like, what, you know, are you from around here? And again, when I say that, people are probably like, T, how did you not realize that he was flirting with you? But again, Neuro Spicy here. He was also a trainer at the gym, very fucking hot, very buff. I just was not making these assumptions. That's not how I'm not an assumptive thinker. Anywho. again, in retrospect, I'm like, cringe. But at the time, he's like, oh, so, you know, if this is your home gym, where are you from? Are you around here? I'm like, no, you know, I drive for Lyft, you know, so I'm in this area sometimes. This is a gym that I stop at. And so he's asking me questions about Lyft, and I'm answering the questions about Lyft. And the entire time, I'm thinking he, like, genuinely wanted to know about Lyft. And so I'm, like, answering all these questions, like, yeah, like, you know, it's cool. It's flexible hours. I get to work whenever I want to, and blah, blah, blah. And then he's all like, yeah, like indulging that conversation. He's like, yeah, you know, that sounds good. You know, maybe I might want to get into that. And so I'm like, me being a helpful person, I'm like, oh, God. I'm like, oh, would you like my referral code? Oh, God. That's when he finally had to, like, drop the fucking charade and be like, I'm not actually interested in driving for Lyft. And it finally fucking clicked for me. And I felt so embarrassed. I'm like, wow. Like, this whole time, I'm legitimately thinking, you're just talking to me because, like, I'm like, I don't know. Like, it's so weird. And that's, like, not the only time that it's happened. But, like, usually, if I'm by myself and I don't have, like, a friend with me to kind of, like, point it out, like, back then, it was just, like, opportunity missed. That's just one of the many experiences that I was able to go back and deconstruct from this new, reframed, you know, point of view of understanding that I am autistic. Not that I'm, like, dumb or, like, that I just am naive, but because of the way that I think, I am a literal thinker and I'm not manipulative. So I don't assume that other people are the same way, or I didn't until now. You know, it made me feel a lot more comfortable and a lot more validated. It just validated the fact that, no, I'm not this, like, insane, crazy person. I'm not just dumb and, like, things aren't just going over my head for no reason. People are not being 100% honest. People are not saying exactly what the fuck they mean. And because you are expecting people to do or communicate the way that you are, unfortunately, there have been a lot of misunderstandings. And, but, you know, I don't want to say unfortunately, but there have been misunderstandings that have led me to where I am. So that's why it's not unfortunate. And I'm very grateful for this. I'm very grateful to be on this journey because it has not only helped me, but it is helping so many other people. I am so incredibly, immensely proud to be able to give a voice to so many people who have not been able to find the words themselves, who have not been able to connect the dots for themselves, who just kind of needed someone to be that mirror, to validate them, to show them that they are not alone in this. That is an immense privilege. And I'm very, very proud and lucky to be in this position. And I take it seriously.
So the journey is a lifelong one. Because, you know, once you're diagnosed and you start reprocessing everything, you're like, okay, so when I was two, yeah, that's way back. So starting from, let's start from my early 20s. I started having these experiences socially that never made sense to me, but were so incredibly painful for me. I've always been a really diligent worker, a really hard worker. I went to school for business administration and got into real estate. I really wanted to get into commercial real estate. And for some reason, that crowd just terrified me because, you know, masking, right? You don't know when you're masking before you're diagnosed, but it's just something that you inherently do just to protect yourself. And I couldn't figure out how to do it in a very old man dominated industry, right? Mm-hmm. Even though I knew what to do, I knew I could be successful, there was nothing I could do to fit in with those people. So I completely abandoned it. I abandoned it. And it was a good time because it was 2009 when the credit crisis hit. Real estate was not it. So it was the perfect storm. So then I got into cosmetology because even when I was in high school, every time there was a prom, of course, being like the awkward Black girl that I was in a very white school, no one was asking me to go to any prom. So I always had girls lined up out of my kitchen doing their makeup and hair, like doing the updos and stuff. And I thought, well, I need a new career, so I'll just go to beauty school. And I did really well with that. But when it came to working in salons, I struggled so hard with the people. No one ever liked me. Blow dryers going, like flat irons clicking, 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 like fluorescent lighting. I didn't know why all those things just grated on my nerves so hard, but I couldn't last doing hair. So then I switched to nails because I thought, well, nails, it's quieter. I like fine detail. I can zone out. I can dissociate and do that, which I didn't know that's what I was doing at the time. But even that became too much and no one ever liked me wherever I worked. So then I got into lashes, and lashes and brows are big money. I didn't have to work that much to make a good income, and I could make enough where I could like pay for my own little private studio and work alone. And that was the first time I ever worked alone and worked for myself. Girl, that was the longest job I ever held. It was the job I created for myself. Mm-hmm. And because I went to school for business, like I knew how to run and market a business. I did super well for myself financially, but not knowing my brain, I set my business up in a very neurotypical way. And, you know, I worked Monday to Sunday, open to close, from dark in the morning to dark in the evening. And I was in a relationship at the time. I was living with that person. And looking back at it now, my brain just slowly started to crumble. And unfortunately, I was with someone who I later found out has a narcissistic personality disorder. So it was just the perfect storm to break me completely down, down. So when the pandemic hit, I lost my business. I was living with this person who had me right where they wanted me. I went from being the breadwinner to them being the breadwinner, and I lost my mind. I was also like kind of reaching for New Age spirituality too, which didn't help because I just needed something. I needed to be rescued by something.
Yeah.
Not realizing that I just needed a physician. That's a whole other story. So losing my mind was a little bit of burnout and shutdown and trauma that I didn't realize was trauma at the time. And I went through a really dark season of being very suicidal and making attempts on my life. And I made some friends who, like, I got on Bumble BFF and made some girlfriends. Those are very brief friendships because it wasn't like real friendship, you know?
Yeah, not a soul tribe.
No, not at all. But one of the girls there, they were asking me about my relationship, and I started to tell them a little bit about it. You know, when you don't realize you're being abused and then someone asks you about your relationship and you tell them stuff and they're like, their jaws on the floor, like, girl, what?
Yeah.
one of the girls in that group was like, do you know what a narcissist is? Do you know what an empath is? Like, here's this blog that I read called The Narcissist and the Empath. It's like a blog or an article or something. And she sent it to me and I read it and I was like, oh my God. Oh my gosh. And that's what sent me to therapy. And then when I got into therapy and started talking about him and all my trauma and everything that I've been through, she started crying. When you make your therapist cry, you know that's serious. It's real. And she started talking to me about CPTSD and anxiety and depression. Mm. And I didn't recognize what those things were. Coming from a really religious background, you don't talk about mental health or mental illness or anything like that, or trauma. I was always taught to just like pray things away. And then when I left religion, there is no prayer. There's meditation and New Age spirituality, which is like same thing, different font, right? So then she referred me to a nurse practitioner that prescribed me meds for the anxiety and depression. and I was going, I was doing EMDR for the CPTSD, and that helped. And I also ended that relationship eventually, which was excruciating, but I was able to do it. And when I started treating the CPTSD and working on the anxiety, and my body finally lifted out of survival mode,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't really function properly. Like, I felt better, but like everything just felt so foreign to me. And like I said, I had to close my salon. Like, I had to find a new career, and I'm going to school online, and I can't like read a full sentence without stopping and doing something else and picking something else up. I'd read half a sentence and like, oh, I have to do this other thing. And I couldn't focus on anything. And high school was kind of like that for me, but it was just so much worse in my 30s. I'm like, why can't I grocery shop? Why can't I read? Why can't I sleep? Like, I can't sit through a TV show. I can't do much of anything. And so I talked to that nurse practitioner about those things, and she referred me to a psychiatrist, and I started talking to them about these things. And they said something about like residual effects of long periods of trauma, and how CPTSD can manifest in all these different ways. And like, you're strong, you can handle it, you're doing so good. Like, it was a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
So then I get on TikTok and get into Narc Talk, and Narc Talk kind of led me to Trauma Talk, and Trauma Talk kind of led me to Autizzy. Autizzy.
Yeah.
I was like, wait a minute.
Am I that autistic? Pipeline is direct.
This is making a little too much sense. I thought autism was something little white boys get. Like, am I autistic? This seems weird. So I talked to my therapist about my suspicions that I could have autism. And she was like, that makes a lot of sense. I was actually kind of suspecting that that might be the case. I'm like, girl, could you let somebody know? So then she referred me to the University of Washington, which has like a big autism center, mainly for kids. Like, during the time of the pandemic, they were only evaluating children.
Mm-hmm.
But the people there were really helpful and were able to refer me to someone like hours away that could do a full evaluation. That process was also for me, and like, I don't want to scare anyone into like not getting evaluated, but that was very scary for me. One, I don't have insurance. I didn't have insurance at the time. I still don't. So I had to really dip into my savings to pay for that. And it was a couple $1,000s.
Wow.
And it's like, it took several days, because it's like, it's many hours. Like, each test takes like 4, 5, 6 hours to get through, and they're also kind of like weird questions, and like, explain this or build a story around this or choose this toy or this toy and like make a story out of this. And it was so
wow, like,
put on the spot, and having to, it's really just looking at your pattern recognition and your ability to navigate your way through certain social situations and things like that. It was like my worst nightmare, having to be put on the spot and like be kind of quick on your feet, which I'm not. They want to see how you are unmasked, basically, is what it is. And that's terrifying for someone who doesn't want to do that. And then after that, I was able to just feel validated in myself. I was able to show myself some compassion. Also, another thing, once you get your evaluation and your formal diagnosis, like, there's not much else after that. You get your diagnosis, and that's kind of it. There's no prescription, there's no real support for autistic adults, especially when you're high masking, and that physician like just kind of decides you're going to be okay. You've been okay all this time. Like, work on your trauma, keep seeing your therapist. But as far as the autism, like, whoop. Like, yeah, you're not a little kid.
So, I mean, I knew a lot about myself already, because I had always been, you know, analyzing myself and others. So there were a whole bunch of ways in which I knew that I was different from other people. And so, like, I didn't ever have to go through the thing of, like,
unmasking around my friends or something, because like I have always been making friends by sort of like telling people what I'm like, so mm-hmm. that they will kind of know, is this the sort of friendship you want? Here's the kind of person I am. So I knew a lot about the kind of person I am, but I had no idea that like that was a thing that had a name, that, you know, and I certainly didn't know that it was autistic. And then really how I figured it out is pretty strange. I was really interested in like, part of it was just like watching how people talk to each other on Twitter, and that their responses, how they replied to each other didn't make sense to me. Like, that's not a response. Like, the last thing that person said. And I think I just like quietly just accumulated a lot of data points for a long time, until I could like see the pattern and see the way people were thinking that was making them respond to each other differently than what made sense to me. And that's when I realized there is a fundamentally different way of thinking than how I think. And it is the normal way. And so what am I then? Because I did not know until then that like the way just my brain processes thoughts, and you know, that like, because it seems logical to me, but when I finally just, I was like, finally like realizing that everyone else is finally being able to hear the language they're actually speaking. I mean, like, oh my God, they are speaking a different language. You know, I finally, like the pattern, I had enough data points, it clicked, I could see it. And so I started testing it by telling people, here's how I think your brain works. And I would say it to them. And they'd be like, yeah, they wouldn't be impressed at all because they think this is normal. How, and I'm like, you don't understand. I didn't know this existed my whole life until I figured that out. But so then they're like, yeah, of course, this is how my brain works. This is how everyone's brain works. I'm like, not mine. And so the kind of obvious alternative was like, am I autistic then? But that didn't make sense because it didn't fit with the stereotypes and, you know, the like the biased perception that unfortunately I also shared. And so I started reading more. And then I just realized that like the diagnostic criteria, the way it was described in the medical model, it didn't make sense. Like this fundamentally does not make sense. Like I had believed it too. Like there's this kind of brain that like makes you like math and science more. And like, and I was like, wait, what about just all the people with this brain who like social things instead of math and science? And that's when I realized that I had learned everything I knew socially in the same way that you could learn about computers, or you could learn, you know, and I did not learn it in the way that autistic people learn it. And so, yeah, of course I took the tests and stuff, and, but it was really as soon as I just started like asking people questions about their brains and really just kind of testing it, like telling people, here's how I think your brain works. Tell me if I'm right or wrong. That made it clear pretty quickly that, like, yeah, there was the typical way of thinking and an autistic way of thinking, and I had the autistic way of thinking. And when I started talking to autistic people about these things, I didn't have to keep explaining myself. And they actually just understood me as soon as I said something. And like, to me, it's silly to even think that you got to go beyond that. You've never had people understand you your whole life. And then you start talking to autistic people. You understand them effortlessly. They understand you effortlessly. I'm sorry. That's your diagnosis. Ching. Like, you don't need more than that. Like, we recognize each other. We know each other. And so, yeah, I mean, I went off and did all my research from there. And then, well, I kind of needed to explain the things that didn't fit. And so one of the things has been like, okay, these like non-speaking autistic kids, how am I the same? And then I started doing research and reading things that non-speaking people had written. And I realized they absolutely have the same kind of brain as me. Yeah. Just they have motor issues, so they make them not talk. But like, we are the same. And that really, especially when I realized like, this society dehumanizes autistic people who cannot speak or who are more obviously stereotypically autistic, mm-hmm. and they are the same as me, and that I was being seen as more of a person for no reason. Like, it was just so morally wrong to me than to align myself with the neurotypical like majority the way I had always tried to, yeah. when that meant abandoning these people that I knew. No, these are my people. They are like me and I am like them. And that's also when I realized the medical model is it's so inaccurate and flawed. Yeah. And I do not respect as the professionals in that field enough to think that they have any right to diagnose me or tell me about my brain. I figured out more about autism in like 2 days of researching it than some of the researchers have been doing it for decades. Because it's how my brain works and it's not how theirs works. And so that's when I also decided like, I will never get a medical diagnosis because I do not believe that they deserve that power over me. Mm-hmm. And that's when I also realized like this is not a disorder. There's nothing wrong with me. And so this isn't something to be diagnosed. And so I tend to call it, I am self-identified.
Mm-hmm. Because I like that.
Like, it is an identity the same way that like, I'm queer. Nobody can diagnose me as queer. I did that, you know? Mm-hmm. And they're equally important parts of my identity. And yeah, that was really, and then ever since then, I've just tried to make other people feel good about taking that same journey and hopefully be a little voice to counteract all of the shame and bias that is so prevalent in our culture.
So I was actually raised to be like a toxic positivity professional. I was like a major internalizer and never wanted to admit that I was struggling with anything for pretty much my entire life. When I finally did wind up going to counseling was when I was in college at like age 26. And the problems that I brought to my therapist were things about like having trouble making friends or keeping friends, always being worried about the things that I was saying, feeling like everyone sort of hates me all of the time. And she kind of unofficially diagnosed me with social anxiety. And I kind of rolled with that a little bit, even though I felt like it didn't really fully explain who I was as a person. And another thing too is I would always blame sort of my mental health struggles on having been in an emotionally abusive relationship for 5 years. From when I was like 16 to 21, I was with this terrible person who did a lot of awful things to me. And so I just would kind of attribute it to trauma from that, as opposed to like looking a little bit deeper into it. Mm-hmm. And then in the beginning of 2020, the pandemic hit and everything came to a halt. And like a lot of us, I just like lost all of the momentum that had been like carrying me through and like sort of enabling me to give this image of this like productive member of society. And I just like fell into this deep, what I now know is a burnout, but I thought it was just depression. And I just like had no energy to do anything anymore, was like not excited about anything, until finally in the summer of 2021, I went on TikTok, and within a few weeks, the algorithm had nailed me down. I kept seeing a bunch of ADHD videos, and I self-diagnosed with ADHD first. And at the time, I was also seeing a lot of misinformation about how ADHD and autism are so similar. And so I would attribute like most of my autistic traits to just being ADHD, until finally I realized actually the two conditions are pretty different. And a couple of months later, realized that I was autistic, mm-hmm. Which during my self-diagnosis journey was also when I was just starting graduate school. And so I was so busy trying to keep up with my classes and all of this work to do, plus trying to figure my own self out. I didn't really have time to really sit down and look at it. And eventually in February, I wound up like just completely dropping out of graduate school because of all of the, just, I couldn't do it anymore, basically. Mm-hmm. And decided to turn around and start my own life coaching business because I was struggling so hard to find resources for autistic and ADHD adults. Everything I found was just like directed towards children. And so I figured, you know, if no one's doing this, I might as well do it myself. And so now here I am.
Yeah. So I've done, I've heard a lot of people talk about their experiences, like especially women who were like late diagnosed on TikTok. And I honestly, even with like my journey, I feel like I struggled to relate to like super high masking women, because I think I was told by my psychiatrist that who diagnosed me with autism that like I should have been flagged earlier, and how autism looked in me, especially like pre-middle school, it wasn't a nuanced case whatsoever. I was very obviously like the weird kid with obsessive interests and had some very obvious sensory issues, like restrictive, repetitive behaviors. Like it was, you know, if I was growing up now in the school system, they would flag me. Like I would have been flagged right in daycare because I could not even be in daycare growing up, like because of my autism. It was very clear from an early age that I did not function in the same way that everyone else did. And so I was misdiagnosed with borderline personality disorder when I was 17, which is unethical, by the way. You're not supposed to die. You know that. Yeah. So I was led to believe that I had this disorder that I didn't really have. And a part of me was very grateful to finally have answers. And at the same time, myself and my parents always had this inkling at the back of our heads that this wasn't the right label for me. Mm-hmm. And even now when I look back on, or I look at BPD TikToks and stuff like that, I don't relate to them whatsoever. Even though I supposedly met the criteria strong because I was a traumatized, emotionally dysregulated 17-year-old girl. I just don't relate to anything. I don't know, not for me. And it was never for me. And then I kind of had a crisis in like when the pandemic first started. I began developing a whole bunch of chronic health issues and I had to drop out of my dream college. And I was struggling with chronic pain that nobody knew how to define.
the doctors, it was like just an anomaly how it is often with like marginalized women. You go to the doctor and then you're left with unanswers for years and years on end. It is an absolutely horrendous, terrifying experience, especially as someone who needs answers. Like, I'm a type of person that completely obsess over, I need to have an answer, I need to have an answer. And I'm also a hypochondriac. So that was a really tough year for me. And I was under a lot of duress. And then I was diagnosed with TMJ, which we talked about a little earlier. So it's basically like stress grinding or clenching of the jaw. And it's that a lot of the time it's co-occurring with being hypermobile, which I also have and a lot of other autistic people also have. Mm-hmm. And then I was so sick that I didn't leave the house. And then once I started to integrate myself back into the outside world, I was having panic attacks just walking down the street. Like a motorcycle would come by and I would just flip out and start crying. Or I remember going down, like, there's this tunnel that went, like, I was walking down a tunnel where cars were going and it was on a busy street. And just the reverberation of the like cars against the tunnel, like, caused me the worst panic attack. And like, my sensory issues are definitely one of the like most prominent like dysfunctions of my autism. And they were really like showing its ugly head during the pandemic. Could not walk into like a CVS because of the fluorescence. Like, I was constantly shaking. Could not even be in a park. Like, it was so, my sensory issues were so bad at one point. And it kind of, that in culmination with going back to my psychiatrist and my psychiatrist telling me, you don't meet criteria for BPD anymore, a lifelong personality disorder, which, yeah, I was like, then what the fuck is going on? Right. So I did some research and I came across Samantha Craft's list, which I'm sure the iconic resource in the community. And I was like, damn, like, this is like, this is written about me, right? And I was like, you know, I had a lot of people during that time just tell me, like, you know, what if you just have ADHD and a sensory processing disorder? Like, you don't seem autistic, blah, 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 blah. But like, it was so obvious as soon as I looked back on my childhood that this was not just ADHD. And essentially, it just was like, whoa. And then all of a sudden, reading experiences from like trans and femme presenting like autistic people, I was like, this is me. Like, I was like, there is no way that this is not me. And so, it took me like a year to get a diagnosis because the wait lists were so backed up. But I and my family invested in a diagnosis because I was kind of in a crisis and they wanted papers on me if I was going outside, because at that time it was very likely for me to have sensory overload in public. And I was also having a lot of like PTSD episodes. I also have PTSD. So I would walk down the street at home and be scared that I was going to bump into my abuser and like other factors. And then that in combination with my sensory issues, like, I was freaking out all the time. So I got diagnosed with PTSD and autism and ADHD and generalized anxiety disorder. And I was like, okay, this really makes sense. Like,
yeah.
Here I am now. It's definitely been a journey. It's really, it hasn't been easy. But through that, it's funny because, I mean, we could probably talk about this too. It's like you look at your parents or other people in your family and you're like, okay, I see you.
Yeah.
And you haven't known about this, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I
knew and felt from when I was a young kid that I was very different from everyone else. And I actually grew up in a really secluded religious cult. And so when I came out of that, I just thought like, oh, it's just the trauma of being in the cult. And I'm just so different because I was cut off from regular society. So like all of my autistic and ADHD traits, I just attributed to trauma and my upbringing, basically. And it wasn't until 2020, I kind of came to this place in my healing journey where like I was able to, like my nervous system was finally at rest. Like I was in an environment that was completely safe. I had done just years and years and years of like healing, learning how to regulate my nervous system on a regular basis. And my ADHD and autistic traits increased. They got like so much louder because they were finally safe to be louder. Mm-hmm. And I realized that it was like my trauma and my, you know, my fight or flight fawn responses that were like suppressing who I actually was, and like kind of keeping me in line or in check and like in, just kind of like in the box of normativity, if you will, at least in appearances. And at the same time in 2020, I also hit this like really, really massive burnout. And it was really scary because I've never been in a place like that before where I didn't have like the internal resources to take care of myself in almost any way. Like the only things that I was really able to do were in relation to making money that I needed to like sustain my son and I and providing for my son, like doing, you know, I was able to like help him brush his teeth and take a bath and eat, but like I wasn't able to do those things for myself. And I was like very, very confused. Like, what the hell is going on with me? What's wrong with me? And so I started like just really digging into, you know, the symptoms, the traits that I was experiencing, the symptoms of autistic burnout kind of showed up. And my dad and I haven't had a relationship like growing up, but as an adult, we've kind of reconnected, and he's autistic, and many people like on his side of the family are also autistic. And so that kind of came up like in conversation, and he was like, you know, you do act a lot like me. you know, do like all the things that we do share are like really autistic traits. And so I started looking more seriously into it and researching about it, taking all of the online tests I could, you know, come across over and over and over, compiling my binder and, you know, just like getting together, like all the information and like digging in and kind of trying to come to terms with it myself. Like, what does this mean for my life moving forward? What does this mean for my past and my present? And I eventually like went to a doctor after being in a state where I was just kind of, I just like didn't know, I didn't know what was going on or how to move forward. And she basically just gave me like validation. She was like, look, we can go through a whole, like you could pay and you could go through a whole evaluation, or if it's like really just like the external validation that you need, I'm here, like I'm giving you that. I see what you're dealing with and what you have dealt with your whole life. And I see that it corresponds completely with autism. And so that was really helpful because I felt like I really just like needed someone to validate my experience. But I also, like, she had kind of walked me through the pros and cons of getting formally diagnosed, and it just didn't make logic. Like, I was done with school. I have a son who I share custody with. And so, like, there were a lot of logistical things that just wouldn't make sense for me to actually be formally diagnosed. So that's how, that's kind of how things happened.
Yeah, so I kind of had a long journey. So when I was around toddler age, doctors kind of initially had some concerns where they thought that it was possible that I could be autistic because I was struggling with certain sensory issues, like textures with clothing and certain foods. And also I had like kind of just issues, I guess, with like maturing. Like I couldn't tie my shoes at the age that everybody else could. I couldn't use a belt, like things like that. So they preemptively, just as like a caution, put me in, I believe it was like speech therapy, because I was had struggles with like speech and physical therapy to help with my motor skills. And I remember doing like speech therapy specifically all the way till like first grade. Like I remember being like pulled out of class and everything. And after that, everything was pretty, I guess, good. Like I was pretty happy. Obviously, I knew there was, I guess, a difference in me. Like I knew that I wasn't like everybody else somewhat, but it wasn't like bad enough to where like it was really greatly affecting my life. And it wasn't until like middle school where I guess shit hit the fan and things got really difficult. And I really struggled with just connecting with my peers and fitting in. Got really bad social anxiety. I came home from school every day crying, having panic attacks, and things that I kind of look back in retrospect were probably meltdowns. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like the first time I started having like suicidal ideations and things like that. So my parents, of course, were really concerned. So they sent me to we went to a therapist or a doctor to see about getting just a full autism diagnosis, because they started to realize that a lot of my traits were matching up with that. Because besides those social difficulties, I was also had like my really strong hyperfixations and special interests and like obsessive mm-hmm. interests. And they're like, this has to be it. So yeah, we went to a therapist. This is when I was like 12 years old. And they, of course, were like, oh, I don't really see, like, he's functioning well enough. So I don't really see, you know, the point of like an autism diagnosis. So, but they did diagnose me with like social anxiety, ADHD, and like depression. And that's when I first started getting like medicated for those things. And yeah, then I didn't really, so I kind of just for the whole time after that, just thought everything, I attributed everything just to social anxiety. So it wasn't until around late high school, like senior year of high school, when I was actually making a documentary for a senior project about autistic children, where I started questioning it again, because I just could see all the similarities. Mm-hmm. And so me and my parents started like thinking about it again. And we went to doctors again. Once again, they denied it. Like, oh, you're making eye contact. You're talking to me now. So there can't be anything wrong. You get good grades in school, all that stuff. And then it wasn't until the very end of senior year where we were looking through like medical records for like vaccinations or something for, cause I was at that time, I was going to go out of state for college. And I think we were like looking through the medical records, and we found that that therapist I went to when I was like 12 years old also had diagnosed me with pervasive developmental disorder, which the very year after he went to that therapist, that was actually put on the DSM-5 as autism spectrum disorder. So it's similar to like the Asperger's thing, where it's not really an official diagnosis anymore. It's all just under the diagnosis of autism. So basically all these years I had autism, but it didn't get put on the criteria until the year after he went to that therapy. So yeah, so that's my wild journey.
Yeah, a bit about my background. I'm 27. I've moved around a lot as a kid. I discovered my ADHD-ness this year, actually, coming out of 2020 and the pandemic and COVID and stuff like that. I was really hitting a wall mentally, and I had always put my mental health kind of like on the back burner a little bit, and was going through like some family stuff and a lot of other traumatic events that I won't get into. But yeah, and it was finally time for me to focus on me. So at the start of 2020 is kind of where all of that happened. And then going into 2021 is kind of where I realized that it's very possible I might be ADHD, because that's when I started getting like content on my For You page before my Earth to Cam tech account about it. And like, I didn't think anything of it. I was just like, you know, just, oh yeah, that's what's weird. Like, I just, why do I have this? And anyways, and not really thinking about it. But then like
all of my like random thoughts that I would have just like in spending time with myself. I did a very ADHD thing, which is like research and deep dive and hyperfixate before I knew what those words even meant or were. Mm-hmm. And eventually got in front of a therapist who was licensed to diagnose and is also ADHD herself and had an autistic partner. And she was able to help me get diagnosed with ADHD last year. So that's how that happens for me. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting because she was almost like a friend and we immediately clicked. And I feel like that should have been the confirmation right then and there when we were just like immediately info dumping with each other. And it didn't even really feel like a therapy session sometimes. Like it still was very helpful, but looking back, I'm just like, man, how did you, hello? But yeah, and as of right now, I'm self-diagnosed autistic just because I've spent so much time doing my own research. And even listening to your podcast, I've heard so many different takes and perspectives on getting a professional diagnosis. And I think within the last like few months or so, I've just been comfortable with being self-diagnosed because it just seems like there's really no benefit that like I can think of, and not to like scare anyone from not getting a diagnosis. Like I know for a lot of people it's getting that self-validation or like that stamp of approval or whatever. Mm-hmm. And for me that was very much myself for a long time too, because I just wanted to be told that I was right, I guess. But yeah. In becoming a part of this little TikTok community, that's been the most validating thing. I've been able to be a part of a support group, and just like in addition to the research that I've done and then spending time with people who are ADHD, it's like that's all the confirmation I need, because we're right here, you know.
Once again, I want to thank you guys so much for stopping by and spending a little bit of time with me today. I truly hope you enjoyed this special episode. Make sure you come back next week for a new episode with a new guest and a little bit of a change in format. Again, make sure you go over to my YouTube page and check out my most recent video in the Untethered vlog series for more in-depth background into what happened during the break and what I am going to be doing moving forward with both the vlog series and the podcast. I love you guys so much. Stay safe, stay healthy, stay happy, and stay blessed. Much love.